I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast, featuring me, Mike Calvin, Glenn Moore of World Soccer, and Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst. We'll be looking at the transfer market and the final days of the January window in some depth later on. But in this week of all weeks, a club's most important signing could well be a new manager. Roy Hodgson has re-emerged from supposed retirement, and will be looking after Watford until the end of the season. The situation at Everton can charitably be described as more fluid. Owner Farhad Moshiri initially favoured the underwhelming Portuguese coach Vitor Pereira. Fans absolutely hated that prospect. They'll be happy with talk of Frank Lampard taking over, which is becoming more likely as time goes on. The fact remains that Everton have spent £75 million sacking managers in recent years. So, Glenn, that can't continue, can it?
Well, it's an odd one, isn't it? I mean, they've also spent a huge amount of money on players without noticeably improving the team at all. In fact, the team's probably worse now than it was when Moshiri took over. It's a curious one for Everton fans. I mean, I guess this is proof that money doesn't always equal instant success. I mean, one they had to look at for, you know, fans of Newcastle. It's a difficult one as well because you've got this guy coming who's, you know, who's spent a lot of money and has finally got the move from Goodison, you know, and what looks like going to be a lovely new stadium with brand new dock underway. And there's obvious clear progress being made off the pitch in that respect. You don't want him to leave, obviously, because although he's converted some of the money into equity recently, I mean, some of the loans, you know, having got this position where you've got this generous benefactor, you want to keep him. But so they don't want to. It's quite a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, they're criticising his decisions, but they're trying not to drive away the man and his money. But you have to say the decisions haven't been that great. It's an absolute exercise in how not to run a football club over the last 5 years in terms of the choice of managers. I mean, Ancelotti was a good choice and they're a bit unlucky that he left. But otherwise, there's been a whole series of questionable appointments, several of which, I mean, the fans weren't keen on Allardyce either. The fans obviously not keen on Benitez. It doesn't look like they're keen on Pereira. It's a real case of basically the toy shop syndrome. You know, someone coming in, you know, this is my toy shop, I'm going to do it the way I want, I'm not necessarily going to listen. And it sounds like the people he is listening to, you know, maybe influences agents who may not necessarily, well, they're not impartial, put it that way. So it's a very tricky one. And I mean, extraordinary that interview you did yesterday, Pereira. Let's be honest, as journalists, we should not be criticising that sort of access and openness.
But fill your boots.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. I mean, a great get, but it's unusual. Portuguese coach is back in fashion, perhaps. I mean, Lager's done well. I mean, not sure they've ever gone out of fashion, but unlike Bruno Lager, he's got no experience in England. He's a curious choice, yes.
Well, he's certainly been out of work recently and hasn't done an awful lot, let's be honest, since winning the Greek league with Olympiacos in 2015. Of course, he won titles in Portugal with Porto in 2012 and 13. You know, how relevant that is nearly a decade on, who knows? Aid, the atmosphere at a football club at a time like this, you know, you brought in Duncan Ferguson, you know, for who knows how long. How difficult is it to galvanise a team to actually, you know, essentially play for their lives in the Premier League when all this is going on?
It's a distraction, but the players just want a manager that they believe in, a manager that they think can take them forward and improve their careers. And because footballers have these short careers, all they want is to achieve the most success that they can. Some prioritise money over other things, but in general, they just want to maximise their opportunities. And if they see a manager that isn't good enough, then obviously we've seen it so many times down the years where that motivation just drops a couple of percent, and that's it. They're done, and you have to move on. So it's important that Everton get this one right. From the outside looking in, it appears there's more football expertise in the stands at Goodison Park than there is in the boardroom. And I think that is the crux of the matter, really. And the players might sense that too. And I think if the players sense that, then they might question whether they want to be at Everton in the long term. Because if you've got a couple of guys at the top, you know, a couple of rich fellas that really don't know what they're doing, then it does filter down to the dressing room. And they think, well, are we really going to achieve our goals here with these two in charge? The fans know more about football than these guys. So I think this is a really, really important decision. It is an underwhelming sort of recent CV from Pereira. 5 months at Fenerbahce, took 1860 Munich down. He doesn't look like the best candidate for the job. Yeah, that I think they need to have a little bit of a rethink. Ordinarily, I'd say that fans shouldn't be deciding who's in charge of the club, but it does appear that they know more about what's needed than the guys in charge.
Mm. The general air of confusion, Glenn, seems to be underlined by the fact that you've got three recent signings under Benitez, Mykolenko, Patterson and El Ghazi, who already seem to be on the outside looking in within that squad. You know, even a club with Everton's traditions isn't too good to go down, is it?
No, it's no use relying on the teams below them being worse, because obviously Watford have now got a new manager that we'll come on to who may well do the job. Newcastle have got shed loads of money and look like they're managing to start to spend some of it. And Norwich have suddenly shown a revival. So you've got a situation whereby it is possible for that gap to be closed if Everton doesn't start picking up points to keep away from it. There is a certain level of chaos. It must be, just because your famous old club doesn't mean you can't get relegated. You know, I mean, it's less rare these days. But you know, Newcastle have obviously gone down. Man City went down 20 odd years ago. There are some, you know, there's some big slumbering giants in the Championship, and it's not that easy to come back, as quite a lot of them have found. Again, we're saying about, you know, his record, even the title wins. I mean, Olympiacos, it was the third win in a run of five. I mean, basically everybody won the title. Yeah, you know, with Olympiacos in Porto, they've only won two titles in 8 years since he left, but they've won. It was like they'd won 79 beforehand. I mean, these weren't particularly, you know, it's always great to win a championship, but they weren't particularly good jobs. Fenerbahce were reigning champions when he took over midway through the season. That didn't work out that well. And when they won the relegation battle, they lost in Germany. And he said it's because they didn't spend any money. Well, Everton haven't got a lot of money to spend. And obviously with four or five days to go to the end of the transfer window, they're not going to have much time to spend what little they do have. So you're going to have to work with the squad you've got. And as Adrian pointed out, if your players like, you know, the top players there like Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Jordan Pickford, you're going to be wondering, is there a future at this club? You know, and you know, by the time a new ground's built and so on, where will I be? It's a short career, as Andrew said. And yeah, they're going to be players who are going to be in demand if there's no sign of things progressing. So this is an absolutely vital decision to get right. And also, as Pereira did say, timing is crucial, because there are only a few days left if you're going to take any kind of extra investment whatsoever. But also those three new signings, they must be wondering what's going on. You're signed by one bloke and he disappears, you know, a couple of days later.
Yeah, I suppose, what's all this say, Aid, about, you know, the managerial market? Because, OK, Frank Lampard has his allies. I can understand there is a certain reluctance to invest in Wayne Rooney. But, you know, looking to the long term, he could be a good option. But who else?
It doesn't seem as if the managerial marketplace is flush with outstanding candidates at the moment. Maybe that's part of the issue here. I just don't know where I stand on Frank Lampard. I don't know how good a manager he actually is. He did pretty well with Derby, but he did have a lot of funds at that time at the club and he couldn't take them up. At Chelsea, he did well with a limited budget at the start, gave young players a chance, got them into the top four, but then they stagnated. So there's no real sort of discernible style of play, I'd say, with Frank yet. He could be a very good manager. I'm just not sure. So I think he would represent a slight gamble, maybe more of a gamble than Rooney. I have to say, and I've seen quite a lot of Derby Rooney are an Derby are an extremely well-coached team. Now, whether that, how much of that is Wayne and how much of that is the coaching staff around him, I'm not sure. But they know what they're doing. They're very well prepared for each match. And in difficult circumstances, I think he's doing a phenomenal job. So he just hasn't got very many players to work with. I think Rooney might be able to handle it if given the opportunity. And personally, even though it's a short spell that he's had in management, give me the choice, I would go to Rooney over Pereira for sure, and maybe over Lampard as well, given his links with Everton. So in my opinion, he is a standout candidate here. And yeah, he's clearly gettable because he won't need much excuse to leave Derby County, I'm sure.
I think Rooney for Everton is something that is going to happen at some point. The question is whether it happens now. A bit like Lampard and Chelsea. The danger is, like Lampard and Chelsea, it happens too early. And once you've been in there once, it's a bit more complicated going back. Maybe they should be looking at people like Steve Cooper at Forest. Maybe they should be looking at people like Michael O'Neill at Stoke. I mean, yeah, you're not going to get Graham Potter, but, you know, David Moyes is probably the most successful manager they've had there, and he came from Preston. There's a snobbishness about there's got to be someone famous or someone foreign. There are some good managers out there if they're prepared to take the gamble and the fans are prepared to accept them.
Yeah, what about, you know, Watford have been down this road before, haven't they, Aid? You know, Roy Hodgson, that's a pretty much a no-risk appointment, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. They just need to start picking up points and clean sheets, and that's kind of what Roy Hodgson does. He organises, he works from a solid base, and yeah, if there's something Watford aren't at the moment, that's solid. They've got some dangerous forward players. They look constructed to really hurt teams on the counter-attack. Ismaila Sarr's coming back to full fitness now, I understand. Emmanuel Dennis has had a phenomenal campaign. Josh King, I like, really hard-working centre-forward that's very good in a counter-attacking side. So I think he's got the Arsenal up front. He just needs to organise the players at the back, and he's much better placed than Claudio Ranieri to do that. You know, blessing Claudio did phenomenally at Leicester City, but yeah, across his body of work, I don't think there's much evidence that's his forte, really. So see, I think it is actually the best appointment that Watford could have made. The only slight surprise is that Roy's up for it. You know, he's knocking on a bit. I thought he might start to enjoy his retirement, but clearly that fire is still burning.
He's like Warnock. I mean, or Bobby Robson. He doesn't want to give up. You know, he loves being involved, doesn't he? And I do think it's the ideal appointment in terms of organ. I remember interviewing Bobby Zamora years ago at Fulham, and when he was there, and Bobby saying that basically training was really, really boring. It's just lots and lots of functional work, moving, you know, keeping your distances, positional stuff like that. Is it? But it works. We've seen the results. Yeah, so we're doing it. It's boring, but it works. And they were climbing the table.
Yeah, there were a couple of associated stats that, I couldn't resist coming out with here. And with due deference to the guys who came up with those stats, Rich Jolly and Colin Owens, Roy Hodgson's the sixth man to manage Watford since they kept a Premier League clean sheet, which is bizarre at the best, isn't it? And the other one is Watford's last two managers have a combined age, which is 144, older than the club, which has been around for 141 years. Glenn, is it an advantage that Hodgson's brief will be narrow, basically organise the team, keep them up, the rest of the stuff, the transfers and everything else, just goes on around him?
Yes, I mean, you can't do any transfers anyway now with the window virtually closed, and they're not short of players, Watford. There's plenty there, brought in by umpteen different managers. And also, there's a deal, isn't there, that possible extension for another year. I suspect if he keeps it up, he will want to do another year, and he will be at the back of his mind thinking about next year and how he might change things. But in the short term, it's, yeah, keep them up. And one of the complaints at Palace was that the football was a bit functional, a bit boring. Watford fans won't be too bothered whether football is functional and boring this season, because it's just a case of keeping up. So, I mean, what is it? The lack of clean sheets is an obvious one. I can see that stopping fairly quickly. As Adrian says, there is the firepower to score goals at the other end. Yeah, so it's a very narrow brief, and it's one that should suit Roy down to the ground.
Yeah. What do you make of what's going on at Newcastle, Aid? Are they starting to appreciate how hard it is to spend their newfound money? There are people playing hardball with them in all sorts of different areas. You know, there's a Saudi premium price for players. You know, what do you think's going on there?
Well, I think it's obvious that other clubs will try to rip Newcastle off. It's a no-brainer, isn't it? That it's the January window. It's hard to prize players away, good players especially. And if you want them, you're going to have to pay that price. And when you know how flush they are with cash, then you've got to chance your arm, haven't you? I mean, Manchester United are taking liberties with Jesse Lingard. That is for sure. Asking for a £12 million bonus if relegation's avoided, on top of wages and a loan fee. So I don't like that because it's potentially stifling Jesse's career. But it's their prerogative, isn't it? He's their player. So I think it's a little bit like Everton. I don't know how much football expertise there is in the building and how joined up the thinking is with Eddie Howe and Amanda Staveley and Nicky Hammond, who's obviously been brought in as sort of, you know, to oversee the transfer window on a short-term basis. Now, Nicky knows football, but this is a different level to what he's been used to, isn't it? And I don't know how strong his contacts are in regards to the type of players Newcastle are targeted. It feels a little bit of a sort of let's play as many shots as we can and see how many land. It doesn't feel that strategic, does it, right now?
No,
but they just need to get better players into the building and give Eddie something to work with between now and May. But what I find most boggling so far is the lack of defenders. Obviously, Trippier's come in, but they have to get at least three more defensive players in that dressing room quickly. And it feels like it's going to be a bit of a panic up at the last minute.
Yeah, well, they're being linked with everyone possibly on the planet. If you're talking about defenders there, right, and maybe this one to you, Glenn, if you're looking at a left-back, Leverkusen's Mitchell Bakker or PSG's Levan Kurzawa, they've been linked at centre-backs with Issa Diop from West Ham, Nat Phillips from Liverpool in midfield, Gigi Wijnaldum, Todd Cantwell from Norwich, Mario Balotelli. It's almost transfer bingo, isn't it? And when you have a potentially key signing like Bruno Guimarães, people were saying £34 million, that Brazilian DM from Lyon was sorted out. All of a sudden, Lyon saying, oh, hang on a second. It's no way to run a railway, is it, Glenn?
No, but you're inevitably going to get that, that price thing. I mean, Lyon, Michel Aulas there has always driven a hard bargain. I can see where Man United are coming from. I mean, they don't want to sell Lingard to a rival. And Newcastle, so they've turned down West Ham and Spurs. Newcastle, if you're at United's boardroom, you're thinking Newcastle will be a rival in about 3 or 4 years. So if we can delay that by a year or two, by them getting relegated, that's all well and good. So if we're going to help them survive, we're going to make sure we drive a hard price for it. I suspect there will be an accommodation of about 7 or 8 million or something like that, and it will happen, but, who knows. But looking at a lot of those players, with the exception of Target, who's only just been displaced, most of those players are out of favour, have hardly played all season, and therefore they're expected to drop straight into a very frenetic relegation campaign where the games will be coming thick and fast over the next few weeks. And with players they've never played with and a manager who's not been there that long, it's not going to be easy. I mean, for obvious reasons, players who are settled are less likely to be allowed to leave. Clubs are looking to get rid of dead wood, basically. And that's what Newcastle are going to be resorting to signing in most cases, unless they pay absolute top dollar for players to deprive them away from decent clubs and contracts and playing positions. So it is a very difficult window. And with improvement elsewhere, the relegation race looks like being a fascinating one.
Yeah, when we're looking at United aid, Anthony Martial has joined Sevilla on loan. Crystal Palace are pushing very hard to be the refuge for Donny van der Beek. Those two exits from Old Trafford, they might just be on a temporary basis. There's some logic to both of them, isn't there?
Definitely, yeah. And they're both excellent players. So it's one of those, it's a reluctance to sort of give up on them to some degree, but they're clearly not part of the plans. I think Martial's been up against it ever since the emergence of Rashford. and the fact that they brought in Cavani and Ronaldo to play up front. There's just no space for Anthony Martial, and he's a player that I think needs to be loved. He needs to have a cuddle. He needs to have that arm round him, and he's not really had that with recent Manchester United managers. So he needs to go. I'm sure he can succeed elsewhere. He's an excellent player. So's Donny van de Beek. There's just not really a place for him in the Manchester United team, not with Bruno Fernandes there, Pogba there, and the system that they play currently. So I think it's just a confidence issue with van de Beek. He could be tremendous for Crystal Palace. I think within that system, the 4-3-3 with Vieira, we've seen Conor Gallagher, how brilliant he's been as a box-to-box goal-scoring midfielder. Well, he could easily mirror that on the other side of whoever plays as the principal defensive midfielder for the Eagles. So van de Beek and Gallagher running off, you know, joining in, taking turns to join in with attacks, I think works. They're both industrious players as well without the ball. So yeah, I like that potential move. And personally, I hope it happens, because I feel desperately sorry for van de Beek, who's a talent that's currently being wasted.
Yeah, I've got sympathy for both of them. I mean, from Martial, had a good season under Solskjaer, but it can't be easy when you've been shunted from position to position, and every manager's got a slightly different technique. I mean, even like, it's taken a while for Fernandes to find his position in Rangnick's formation, because Rangnick's formation theoretically hasn't got a place for a player like that. But it looks like he's going to be too good to keep out. In some respect, I'd like to pay tribute to those players who continue to perform at a high level at clubs regardless of the managerial churn. The ones that, you know, unlike Ndombele, the manager who nobody picks, the player who no manager picks, the ones who every manager picks. I mean, United, actually, Wan-Bissaka's played most games under various managers. I know he's got his critics there, but he has played under most of the managers they've had. Even Fred's played quite a lot of games. But, you know, someone like Craig Cathcart at Watford, for all those managers, he's nearly always in the team. It's Ismail Assar, Ducoy, two clubs now, you know, managers keep picking him. It can't be easy, you know, being a player with that constant churn. I mean, agent would know more. But, yeah, when you've got different managers with different ideas, you know, everyone's got a slightly different sort of where you're going to play and so on, to keep that level of performance consistently despite the sort of stuff going on around you.
Yeah, you just got to find a manager that trusts you and that puts you into the role that brings the best out of you. And it's clear for van de Beek and for Martial that they haven't got that at Manchester United, so they have to go. It's a sensible parting of the ways for me.
Yeah, you mentioned Ndombele there, Glenn. You know, a few fun and games around him. You know, it looked like he was going to PSG, and then PSG was suddenly concerned about the size of their squad. Surprise, surprise. Clubs will be opportunistic in this situation. With Spurs in mind, I think we can probably be safe in the knowledge that there's going to be a few frantic days ahead for them. Is it all likely to go down to the last minute, as it so often does under Daniel Levy?
It normally does under Daniel Levy, doesn't it? As if he sort of spends the first, like the poker player comes at the very last moment. I mean, he often gets it right, but not always. It's very high risk. Must be deeply frustrating as a manager. There is the benefit, I suppose, in this particular transfer window, that in that we're basically not playing for 2 weeks. I can recall transfer windows when the window was shut on the night of matches, which has been must be horrendous as a manager when you're trying to run a game and also oversee transfers. I can remember the column we used to do at the Independent with Neil Warnock. Yeah, last minute transfer scrambles. Yeah, people trying to get medicals. Yeah, fax machines. Yeah, midnight. There was the one they had where I think Sky caught a player. I think it might be Punchin coming into the building at QPR when he wasn't supposed to come in. And Southampton rang up and says he's our player. We haven't given him permission yet. They had to pay an extra £50,000.
What's a fax machine, by the way?
Punchin paid out of his own pocket, because QPR was not our fault. You're supposed to stay around the corner. Yeah, he'd actually caught on camera. So it's an absolutely frantic couple of days. And Levy likes to see himself, to get back to Levy, as the master of this situation. You know, always driving the hardest bargain, the best deal. Which must make for some interesting conversations with Antonio Conte, who's not one to step back. It does look like they could have quite a good window, Spurs. But we won't know until late on Monday night.
Yeah, well, it looks like Conte's influence is probably being felt in the idea of getting Adama Traore in from Wolves and maybe transitioning to a right wing-back. That probably would be decent business at around about 20 million. They've been linked also to Porto's Colombian winger Luis Diaz, who's scored 16 goals and assisted in six others in 28 games. They're talking about 46 million. Porto, surprise, surprise, want more. How do you see it all shaking down, Aid?
Well, it depends what Conte wants to do. Tactically, we know that he likes wing-backs, but we've also seen him flip it, haven't we, in recent games because of an issue, basically, with the wing-backs. He needs more from them. And if he can't get enough creativity from his wing-backs, then I think he could easily ditch it and go to a back four and bring in one extra attacking midfielder. For me, that would probably be the better bet, in which case then the whole issue of signing wing-backs would be null and void. Traore is an interesting one, isn't he? Because Traore is one of the most destructive players I think I've ever seen in terms of his pace, the way that he can penetrate defences, the brilliance on the counter-attack. Yet he very rarely scores and he very rarely sets up a goal. It's bizarre, isn't it? I just think he's going to always be a player that managers believe they can turn in terms of, I can get that end product out of him. And if there is a manager out there that can do it, you think it might be Conte. And yeah, if they can get him for 20 million, there is an unreal player there. A couple of years ago at Wolves, there was a point where I don't know whether there was a player out there on the planet that was ripping apart defences more consistently than Traore, who now finds himself on the bench at Wolves. He's a curious player. Hard to sort of grade him, really. But there is that potential. And managers, I think, will always be tempted because of his unbelievable speed. And like he did it, he turned Victor Moses into a very effective player for Chelsea. That could be the case with Traore. Let's face it, Traore at wing-back can't be worse than Emerson Royale or Japheth Tanganga or Matt Doherty, potentially. It's just not happening for those guys.
I mean, Troy always finishes diabolical, but there was a period when he did set up quite a lot of goals when Jimenez was really on form. He's, you know, so you can see Kane would flourish from that sort of service. But, it could be... wouldn't like to play against him when he's tearing down the wing with that extra 20 yards he's got starting at the wing-back position, so he would have built up quite a lot of pace. It's like Jonah Lomu coming towards you.
It'd be the smell of the baby oil that would put me off.
Against the best teams, though, and Spurs, look, Spurs have got a long way to go before you can say that they're one of the best teams. Would you trust Adama Traore when he gets pushed back into a back five? I don't think I would. I think that the other teams would potentially target his defensive play. So it's all well and good, thinking in theory he's the guy because of the way he can play on the counter, but yeah, he would also make mistakes, I'm sure of that. He wouldn't be the perfect solution. But yeah, I think it'd be an interesting signing.
And then Diaz would be exciting. It's tremendous in the Copa America. I know it's always slightly unwise to buy off tournaments, but clearly he's still doing the business domestically as well.
Mm. What do you think of Aston Villa, Glenn? They seem to be building shrewdly, linked with Rodrigo Betancourt from Juventus. That seems to fit the pattern of the team development, you know, an upgrade basically at defensive midfield.
They're having quite a good window at the moment, aren't they? I mean, Coutinho's obviously had a brilliant start, which would be ideal, I mean, given the year he's had, well, the several years he's had with Barcelona, to come in and immediately make an impact. You know, lift your confidence and feel at home. It does look like Gerrard's got a fairly strong idea of what sort of team he's shaping, and that will be an upgrade, as you say, on Douglas Lewis. I think they've certainly, and you know, Digne is an excellent player. So it does look like, yeah, this is, as we mentioned, a difficult window in which to buy players. And it does look like Villa are going to come out with one of the better windows of them, particularly if they get Betancourt, you know, to really push on the second half of the season. But things do look, there's also a real sense of progress at Villa Park at the moment.
Mm. What about Arsenal, Aid, the club with which you're associated? No goal for a minute short of 7 hours. So obviously a striker is what they need. Looks like Dusan Vlahovic is going to join Juventus. Where do they go? It doesn't look like you can trust Aubameyang, to be quite frank. But can you get rid of him when he's on 300,000 a week?
It's a toughie, isn't it? Yeah, I think we've seen that Arteta is not afraid to sort of get rid of players to instill that harmony within the rest of the group. It's not great when you've got a captain that's been removed from that post sort of loitering around. So I do think that they need to find a home for Aubameyang, potentially on loan. I think it's gone on too long now for it to be resurrected. That's the feeling. I don't know what's going on with their relationship, but it's dragged so far on. I understand that he's not gone to Dubai for the training camp. That to me tells me that Arteta is done with him. So they have to look elsewhere. There are options, aren't there? Alexander Isak at Sociedad is a player of real promise. Great age. Had a better season last season than he is having right now. So that's one mild bit of concern. I think Luka Jovic at Real Madrid might be the stopgap solution on loan if it's true that they're going for him. You know, he's a striker of pedigree. He can score, he can hold the ball, he can produce assists. The one that really excites me, though, for Arsenal is their interest in Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I think that he is a potentially tremendous centre-forward. I think that his data, you know, you look at his minutes per goal, you look at all the stats from his performances at Everton, it tells you that he is the real deal. I think he's an excellent number nine, great in the air, holds the ball up, really quick, deceptively quick, and in a team, you know, in a team like Arsenal, I think he could thrive. I really do. They often put in a lot of crosses for no one, yeah, for no one, basically, especially Kieran Tierney. The other day, they put in, I think, 23 crosses from open play. Barely any of them reached the target. If Calvert-Lewin was in there, that would change. I'm a huge fan of his, and I would love to see them get this one over the line, but whether Everton can sell a player, you know, in the current climate with the state of flux that they're in is hard to believe. So Arsenal would have to really push the boat out and potentially get the player to angle for that move in the next couple of days. That is the one I'd love to see more than any of the others.
I cannot imagine Everton selling him now. I mean, there's already unrest to sell Calvert-Lewin, who's didn't he sign a quite a long contract extension not that long ago? I mean, it'd be insane to sell him, particularly when you're facing the danger of relegation.
Maybe they could chuck in Aubameyang on a little loan deal, just
whatever the dressing room needs.
I agree. It's hard to imagine that one, but you know, I can dare to dream.
In the summer, I could see it happening in the summer. Yeah, you know, particularly if it's a lot of money. So Everton, whoever the new manager is, can use it to restructure the team slightly. I mean, interesting piece from Julian Northcliffe for the weekend. Yeah, our centre-forward's going out of fashion anyway. Yeah, the top teams aren't playing them. And as for banging in 23 crosses against Burnley of all teams, I mean, that was just daft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about, you know, there are so many different models out there, aren't there, Glenn? Wolves, it does seem to sort of pivot around the influence of Jorge Mendes, whose agency business is part owned by the Wolves owners, Fosun. You know, you've just had I think it's the 10th Portuguese players come in. Chiquinho signed from Estoril for $3 million. Given all the sort of insecurities and turbulence in this current window, was it a really good move, sensible move, to trigger that 16 million euro release clause to confirm the signing of Hang Hee Chan?
Probably. I mean, he's not had that many games for him, but he's looked quite promising. And if you've already got a player who's bedded in to an extent, so you've done the, you know, you've had a good look at him, you know, you feel he's going to work, yeah, you might as well trigger it and hang on to him. I mean, that's not a particularly expensive fee. I mean, the interesting thing about Wolves, I mean, the Mendes thing is obviously interesting. I guess if you're the club, if it works for the club, and it has worked for Wolves so far, by and large, I mean, when he became involved, though, in the Championship, I guess, you know, the fans are perfectly happy. It might work for everybody all round. You do wonder, I mean, there's been a lot of chatter the last couple of days about Neves going to Arsenal. Can't see that helping Wolves. So you wonder, what, you know, who's pushing that move? Be a good signing for Arsenal. Yeah, I mean, so picking up Hee-Chan, you know, good move. And it's working for them so far. And, you know, clearly, I mean, Lager will be involved in, you know, closely related to them. I guess there is, as you say, there's room for lots of different models in the Premier League, and we do have lots of different sort of ownership structures and management structures. Certainly more efficient than what we've got at Everton at the moment.
Yeah, true. I suppose, you know, if we're looking for a feel-good story in this window, we really shouldn't look too much further than Christian Eriksen linked with Brentford, currently training with Ajax reserves. As a player, you know, I don't want to put you in a difficult position here, Aid, but if you'd had the same problem, would you keep playing? And I know we don't know the details. You know.
Yeah, until you're in that position. Personally, I am surprised that Christian wants to continue playing, because that was such a scare for his family and for his loved ones. And but maybe the doctors have just given him unbelievable assurances that the thing that's been fitted inside him will ensure that he doesn't go through that experience again. And if that's a persuasive argument, then of course he'll want to play. I think I would have probably walked away from the game and just played it safe. That's just a personal thing. You know, there was a guy who played for Southend, Stevenage, Mitchell Cole, really good player back in the day, and he had a heart issue, and he was sort of told not to play, and I think he couldn't resist, and I think he had the odd run out in a five-a-side, you know, post-retirement, and he did end up having a cardiac arrest and passing away. So, yeah, that's in my head. When you ask me that question, that's what immediately comes to my mind. I don't know whether I would risk it, but look, if the player himself is comfortable, if Brentford are comfortable, you know, Thomas Frank knows Eriksen, doesn't he? Then it could work, and he's a class player, of course he is, and I'm sure he'd be an asset to them. Their links with Brennan Johnson are also interesting, by the way. They're really desperate to get him. Good player in the Championship, rapid. I think he'd be an excellent partner for Ivan Toney up top. He'd probably usurp Brian and Bramo. He'll score more goals, I think. But if you're Forrest, you can't sell Brennan Johnson. You've got to resist. You have to. They've not had a chance like this to get promoted under Steve Cooper, who's been excellent, for donkey's years. And Brennan Johnson is their main man. He's their best chance of getting back into the Premier League. They've got to resist Nottingham Forest. And if they don't go up, they can sell him in the summer.
I'm sure Eriksen's had long conversations with Daley Blind, who's had a similar situation. And will be, obviously, in Holland. I know Fabrice Moramba said he wouldn't be happy watching it. He said he probably wouldn't be watching his games. I think James Taylor as well, the cricketer, also stepped back. I guess it's down to every individual, isn't it? And their families. Be interesting to see how the family feel about it. But it's a difficult choice. It's very, very much a personal choice.
Mm. That's even a bit trite talking about football in those circumstances, isn't it? Yeah, and actually, to pick up your point about Brennan Johnson, Aid, you know, it looks like inevitably, you know, Newcastle are maybe thought to be hijacking. You know, Brentford came in with a second bid of 18 million, I think. Newcastle now, obviously, you know, they're going to be linked with everyone, as we've already discussed. They're now even talking about bidding 40 million for Armando Broja, who's done so well at Southampton, actually so well, in fact, that Southampton want to pay a club record 25 million for him. Where are we going with all that?
Well, they can. If you've got the muscle, you might as well flex it, I suppose, if you're Newcastle. Broja is a good player. I do like him. Really promising. And I think from Chelsea's angle, surely they will sell. Surely they will sell, because the new FIFA rules coming in mean that they can't own as many players. They're not going to be able to loan out as many individuals moving forward, are they? So that, I think there'll be a big sale of all the players that are good, but maybe not quite good enough for Chelsea. And maybe Broja falls into that category. Can't blame Southampton for making it. I think it's quite a good bid, actually. Quite a generous bid at 25 million, because it's a real small sample size so far. But he does look a player. If Newcastle want to pay 40, then Chelsea will steer him in that direction, I'm sure. But personally, I think he's found quite a good home, actually, at Southampton, working with Hasenhüttl. I think that might be the best move for his development.
I wonder if Southampton have the foresight to put an option to buy in the clause.
Yeah. Do you think, Glenn, that we're seeing over the last couple of weeks, you know, the top three have got different priorities? You know, Chelsea, OK, there are murmurs about players unhappy with Tuchel and they might move on. you're looking at probably a defensive realignment at the end of the season. Rudiger, Azpilicueta has been linked to Barcelona. Their planning is much more measured, isn't it? And I suppose that's a measure of the club itself and the size and the stature of it.
Well, I guess you can afford to. When things are going well, you just... It's like, yeah, if your house is fine, you're not bothering to do massive repairs. You just do a bit of decorating. those clubs are well run. They're in a strong position. So it's just tinkering around the edges. I mean, they've all got, not Chelsea, but I mean, certainly Liverpool and Manchester City got established managers. Chelsea got an established structure and pattern, even if the manager changes on a fairly regular basis. And they do have quite a long-term planning. I mean, the... The interesting thing about Chelsea is when will they actually start challenging consistently deep into the season to win the championship again? Because it has been a while now. Although, obviously they've won the European Cup, so, and they pick up plenty of cups and trophies, so it's not as if they're doing badly. But, but if you're in that position where you're one of those clubs that you are successful, you're doing well, you're merely just updating. Like your phone, it's just an upgrade every now and again, that sort of stuff on your operating system, effectively. And in particular, City buying players for the long term. Liverpool got some very good young players. I mean, JD Gordon, players like that, they picked up, kind of Derby, or players that are coming right for the youth system. Just dropping those players, a lot of very, very good young players, both at Liverpool and City, and indeed Chelsea. And those players are getting a bit of opportunity, getting a few opportunities, coming in, coming out. And then slowly they start establishing themselves. And players like Curtis Jones and Saar, you see their names on the team sheet more and more. And they're very rarely letting their managers down.
Oh, very quickly on Chelsea, I think they're not far away. They're an on-fire Eden Hazard away, I think, from being a real team. That's what they're missing, that sort of line breaker, someone to light up matches in and around Lukaku. The structure of the team is amazing, as we know. Got great midfielders, excellent wing-backs when they're fit. You've got Lukaku, who I still believe in, that he will score goals. It's just, I guess, the likes of Pulisic and Havertz and Hudson-Odoi, are they the ones to really take them forward? I don't think they are. I think that a truly world-class dribbler that scores goals is where Chelsea need to be looking. But they can afford right now to just be patient, can't they, and take their time to identify that person.
Manchester City, Glenn, the only player that they've been associated with is Julian Alvarez from River Plate. Talk of, I think it's 16 million for someone who's, obviously going to be referred to as the new Aguero. Isn't the reality that a player like that is likely to be farmed out to one of the clubs in the global network, someone like Girona or someone like that?
Probably, and it will be interesting to see, as these FIFA regulations take a bite, whether the clubs, those clubs that do have global networks, you end up sort of selling them to your associate club and then buying them back. So you're not technically loaning them. It's quite a lot of, this whole idea of having these feeder clubs, these farm clubs, I mean, City have done it very well. It's only going to increase. I mean, I see Southampton's new owners, they talked about doing that kind of idea. It's been mentioned at Newcastle already. So, I mean, no great surprise, globalisation has happened in other industries. I mean, you look at, say, Whitbread, we used to know them as a brewery company, where they don't actually own a brewery anymore, but they run leisure clubs and stuff. So that sort of expansion and globalisation has spread all over everywhere else in business. So there's no obvious reason why it wouldn't happen in football. And only, car companies own plants all around the world and so on. So that will be the ongoing development. So you will get these players coming in, and every now and again, The thing about a club like City, they can afford to take a chance. If it turns out, he's just a one-season, two-season wonder and he never gets anywhere near the City first team, that's not a problem. That's not a problem for them. He'd have a decent career somewhere else. He would have had the benefit of some great training and expertise. So in that respect, it's a sort of a win-win all round. If you can afford to buy that many players, I mean, obviously, you say they've only bought one, but that they can afford to take chances on players, which not necessarily other teams can't.
There are going to be a few careers on the line in the next sort of 72 hours or so. Which player would you mark out as the one that's most in need of a move by Monday night? Start with you, Aid.
Oh, I got a long list.
Right. I've got a short list.
Go for it.
There are so many. I mean, there are a couple of Arsenal. I'll just drop in. I'm sure Glenn probably wouldn't use these. Aubameyang for sure, and Bernd Leno. Bernd Leno needs to move. I think, you know, he's too good to be a number two and whatnot. There's no cup competitions to play in this season for Arsenal. So, out of everybody, I'd go back to Donny van der Beek. I just don't think he's going to make it at Manchester United. But I don't write off his career. I think that he's more than good enough to bounce back. He just needs to find a home where he's loved. And yeah, if in the short term it's a loan at Palace, that might be enough to get his career back on track. So yeah, I'll pick out van der Beek.
Well, the transfer I'd love to see is Burnley replacing Chris Wood with Vincent Aboubakar, who's been tearing up for Cameroon in the African Cup of Nations. But I suspect they might struggle to get him out of Saudi Arabia and his €6 million a year salary, reportedly. I did wonder about Ross Barkley, who obviously needs to get away from Chelsea. But if I had to pick one, I'd go for Aaron Ramsey, who I still think, you know, he's shown with Wales, he's still a terrific player. He needs a club that will show him a little bit of love and has a good medical and strength and conditioning department. He's only 31. You know, I'd love to see him back here. He's a terrific player. But and the other one, Barkley obviously needs a move.
Yeah. Well, the implosion of Dele Alli's career is both poignant and puzzling. I first met him as a 16-year-old. He was impudent, instinctive, you know, force of nature. Big move and an England place followed quickly. Too much too soon? Perhaps. But the talent remains hidden by the rust of inactivity and, let's be honest, a bit of complacency. We're told five Premier League clubs, Brighton, Burnley, Everton, Southampton and, of course, Newcastle, are seeking to sign him. They know a good thing when they see one. He's a reclamation project, but at 25, his best years could be ahead of him. In the meantime, thanks to Adrian and Glenn for their insight, and thank you for listening to the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.